don't know. I thought it was very emotional. Why am I crying? Anyway.
And all that to say, the makeup department serving.
Slade. I should have come prepared. I should have come prepared. Like, this is an obvious question to ask.
Zero notes. Perfection. Like, honestly. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to After Broadway, the podcast where we deep dive into anything and everything musical theater from the comfort of my car. I'm Tara.
I'm Stefania.
And in today's episode, we are talking about what I would say was maybe the most highly anticipated movie musical, because it was really the only movie musical of 2022, Matilda, the musical.
Roald Dahl's Matilda, the musical, as it's listed on IMDb.
That's true. We knew about this movie for, I want to say, like a few years, because it was supposed to come out in 2020 with... And then obviously everything happened in 2020. But I think there was a time that we thought that it was going to come out in 2021 with like the rest of all of the movie musicals that came out that year. And I don't know why it was pushed. Do we remember why?
I honestly don't remember why. I do feel it might have just been overcrowded that year, or production took longer than they anticipated. But I don't think it was bad for it to come out kind of like on its own in 2022. No. And just kind of let it like speak for itself.
Yeah. This is a little bit of a late, I guess, episode release for this movie because it did come out in December 2022. But if you happen to listen to us in the UK or Ireland, I know that it's not coming to Netflix until summer this year, which I think is crazy. Bizarre because it was released in theaters, what, like November, I want to say, 2022 in the UK. And then we didn't get it in North America until Christmas Day on Netflix. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, the, like, European Netflix release is, like, half a year later. So,
this is a very odd strategy to me, because the thing about streaming is that everyone gets it at the same time, no matter where you are in the world.
Totally.
So, I think it's a little bit odd that it's being dropped on different dates in different, like, geographical regions. And I know that's because, like, the UK had a theatrical run, which is very abnormal for Netflix in general. So, the release strategy of this movie is weird to me.
Actually, I want to talk about that for a second. Do you think that this would have done well with a theatrical run in North America?
That's a good question. I think families are always, around Christmas time especially, are always looking for something to take the kids to for a family movie. And it does have good name recognition, even though not necessarily... like the musical version, but there is the 1996 movie, I believe, that people have good name recognition of. So I actually think it would have done well as like a summer, or not a summer, like a Christmas holiday kids movie. My family, we would always go see a movie on Boxing Day. So I think I could see like my family going to see this.
The funniest thing to me is that this, for so many kids, is the only version of Matilda that they will know. You've watched that 1996 Matilda. I've watched it, I want to say, like 100 times. I love that movie. And then we've obviously both seen the stage show. I've seen it twice. I saw it on Broadway, and we saw it in Toronto when it was here in 2016, 2017. I don't really remember exactly when we went, but it was here for like 6 or 7 months, I want to say.
Yeah, it was a Canadian production. It was a Canadian production, Canadian cast. And Dan Shamroy as Miss Trunchbull, Paula Brancati as Miss Honey, and then some other people in it. I don't know who else was in it.
Hannah Levinson.
Oh, I forgot about Hannah Levinson. She was one of the Matildas.
There were three Matildas in Toronto, I believe. Three or four. And we saw Hannah Levinson, Toronto celebrity, Hannah Levinson.
Toronto celeb.
Who, I looked her up the other day after watching Matilda to see. She's like a regular on an Apple TV show. So
which one?
She's doing well. I can't,
not that I watch Apple TV, but.
It's like a kid, like a teen show. Like she's playing, like there's a whole bunch of teens in the cast. So it's like, good for her. But also like, come back on stage because.
Come back to theater. We miss seeing you at Media Night.
So talented. Yeah. I know, we miss seeing you at Media Night. Also, she was so good and fun home. And I remember when my parents saw Matilda at Mirvish, they also saw Hannah Levinson. And I remember my dad saying, like, that little girl is a star. She was so young then. Now she was like 16, I want to say.
No, Ruby and the Well. No. Ghost
Are you IMDBing her? Yeah, I think it's called Ghost Rider.
She was in 26 episodes of Ghost Rider. It is Apple TV.
Yeah.
But it does, I'm sure she's wonderful in it, but the poster is giving budget.
It's still Apple TV. Get that Apple TV money.
Get that Apple TV money. Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. Good for her.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, miss her. Yeah, I forgot that she was in that. Oh my goodness, that's where we first saw her. Yeah, it's a Canadian production, and which is, it's always exciting when we get, or what we, when we get a Canadian production of a show, when we see something that like David Mirvish is like, I think this could do well here. We get a lot of like UK based things.
Yes, tons. But this was one that, it opened on the UK, it opened in the UK, I want to say like 2011. It's still running in the UK right now. Mm-hmm. Broadway 2013. We did that episode way back when we looked at the nominees from 2013, and then here 2016. And then to think that in 2022, the movie version was released is kind of like a very long run for this story.
Yeah. That where people are still, connecting with it and still finding reasons to tell this story. I think anytime something is a successful story, that especially that caters to children, you are always, your audience is always regenerating. You're always, your audience is always like coming of age over and over and over again. Like when it first, the audience for it now probably wasn't even born when it first premiered in London. I mean, absolutely wasn't born when it, the book was written in the late 80s, and then when the first movie came out, and then, so you always have a new audience for the show that just keeps growing and maturing into the perfect age to see it.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about this movie, and I guess just, like, the this storyline in general. I think we'll touch, like, briefly on the musical, because I'm confident we're going to compare a little bit of things to it, but this is not, like, a Matilda the Musical stage show episode, is a Matilda the Musical movie episode. What did you think of Matilda the Musical movie?
I think overall it was very good, but I do have like, I don't know.
Should we do like a synopsis? I'm like, everyone knows Matilda.
I mean, we should do a synopsis. Okay. Is that my cue to do a synopsis?
Yeah.
Tara, give us your 30-second summary of what Matilda's about.
Matilda is a young girl who lives with her parents, obviously, the Wormwoods, and her dad is, what, like a car salesman? Some type of a salesman. We don't really get the, like, full gist of what he does in this movie musical, but I know in the 1996 movie, also, it's been a really long time, and maybe I've never actually read the Roald Dahl book. I know we read Charlie in the Chocolate Factory and the BFG and possibly The Witches, but I don't think I ever read Matilda. So I actually don't know if the book is exactly portrayed correctly in any of the iterations of Matilda. I know like there are bits and pieces, but I actually don't know if the storyline is what supposed to be. All that to say, Matilda has, she's different. She's special. She has maybe some sort of powers that we don't see until like the end of this movie musical. But it's kind of like her entire journey growing up as a kid. And we see her go to school and we meet headmaster Miss Trunchbull, who is a horrible person and treats all of the children badly. And then she like befriends Miss Honey. But there's also like a whole side plot where Matilda is like writing stories because she has so much in her head that she needs to get out. It's, I would say it's like almost a coming of age story for this little girl, and also maybe a deep dive into anxiety, which I think we might talk about like a little bit later in this episode. But that was a very like danced all over the place synopsis. It's literally about a girl that is discovering herself, I would say, through like the power of reading.
She is special and no one recognizes she's special except for Miss Honey.
I think some of the kids probably recognize that she's special also.
Sure, yeah. Because she really saves the day in the end. But
yeah. Okay, back to your thoughts on this movie.
Okay, so overall, I thought this movie was very good, very well done, but I don't know. There was something holding me back from like loving it, and I don't know what it was. Maybe it was on my phone too much. But there's something holding me back from just being like, wow, loved it. I thought there was like, there's nothing wrong. Well, there are wrong things about it, but they took the source material that they had, which is the musical based on the original book, and I think they translated it into film beautifully. Like,
yeah,
really beautifully. They captured the tone. I think already, like, Tim Minchin is such a good, like, marriage with Roald Dahl and, like, his style. And so I think, and I think they, like, went even further with that style, almost not sloppy, but kind of, like, wildness that, mm-hmm. like, the music carries. And I think the movie just went even, like, further into that. Like, a frenetic energy almost. Yes. So I think, like, the movie was really great, really well done, but there was something holding me back from, like, truly loving it, which I know is semi-unpopular, but it just is what it is.
I kind of understand what you're saying, although I love this movie. I thought mm-hmm. it was so well done. What a budget. I don't even think I knew that very there would expensive. Be this big of a budget. For some reason, I was like, oh, maybe because, like, with all of the other movie musicals that came out in 2021, I feel like we knew so much about them. We were, like, hit so hard with so many trailers. And this was kind of like, we knew it was happening, but until, like, Red Beret Girl showed up on TikTok, we didn't know it was happening type thing.
It's true. It's so true. It's so true. Yes, I feel like maybe we were oversaturated in 2021, that in 2022, I was just like, whatever comes will come. I cannot.
Yeah. I cannot be watching every trailer. Like, such a surprise to me in a good way, because I didn't expect it to be this good. I agree with you. I think this is a great stage to screen adaptation, really, really true to the stage show. And I think what
even
was
the
so
things
exciting,
they cut, I think were the yes. right choices. Like sometimes too. I'm upset, but I think they cut, the cuts made it stronger versus weaker.
Yeah, the two songs that were cut were Loud and Telly, which is sung by the Wormwood parents. And I think because, again, like, to compare it slightly to the Danny DeVito directed Matilda, like, when you cast Danny DeVito as Mr. Wormwood, obviously we want to see a lot of him because it's Danny DeVito. But these iterations of these parents are so different to that movie that, like, we didn't need it because it wasn't about them. This movie was not about her parents. It was about Matilda, where I felt the 1996 movie was, like, more about the family as a unit. Sure. They also cut the brother. Like, the brother was not in the
Michael
movie musical where he's in the stage show, but, like, doesn't really do much on
no.
stage.
Taylor either. Trench was underused. And
truly. He's very similar to the character. He's very similar to, like, Mike TV from Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
Like, that
sure.
musical. But yeah, I thought the translation was great. We'll get into songs. There, I think, are specific songs that I thought were so well done. And then something that I was looking forward to as soon as we heard that Matilda was being made into a movie was the whole escapologist and the acrobat.
Yes.
Because obviously when you do it on stage, you're slightly limited to what you can do. I loved what they did with the shadow play on stage. I thought it was so smart of how to have Matilda, like, tell these stories through shadows. But when you get to have a budget like you did on this movie and get to hire more actors and basically put these people in a circus, like, that's exactly what I wanted for those scenes. Mm-hmm. So that was really, really well done.
Those moments are already, even in the stage show, very cinematic. The way they're described mm-hmm. and the way it's, and the way you, even how the music changes and the voices change in that moment on stage. So I think, like, movie film was, like, kind of the best way to have that story told, like, in a way. Sometimes I've heard people, like, not loving that part on stage, being like, why are we doing this, like, where are we going with this, whereas I think in the movie, because it was so clear, you're able to just, like, it felt much more cohesive as part of the movie than maybe it does
yeah.
sometimes in the stage show.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about performances or songs next? Where should we go?
Let's talk about songs
okay.
first, and then we'll talk about performances, I think.
Do you have a favorite song from the musical, and then is it the same song in the movie?
That's a good question. Do I have a favorite song from the musical? Ooh, there's so many. It's so hard to say.
I know, it's so good.
I should have come prepared. Like, this is an obvious question to ask. I think I will say my absolute favorite, and then we'll talk about other faves. My absolute favorite song from the musical is When I Grow Up.
Thank you.
I think it just is, like, it's funny because it does not progress the plot in any way. It's actually, like, could be cut and it's not necessary, but it is, like, necessary to the tone of the musical. Like, it, I feel like, if I remember correctly, I think Tim Minchin said it was one of the first things that he wrote because it unlocked the kind of, like, style and just the way to approach these kids singing and just the way that they were going to communicate. And so, like, from that song, then all the other songs and all the other everything grew from that song. So, and it's also just such a beautiful sentiment. And I also was really moved by the way it was done in the movie. I don't know. What did you think?
I know. Okay, so When I Grow Up is, and this is kind of like fits into where songs are in placement in the musical versus the movie. So When I Grow Up is an act two, and I believe it's right after the song Telly, which opens act two. But since that was cut, it goes from Bruce, which I think we'll come back to in a minute, straight
which is typically
into
the act two closer. Bruce is act two, or act
no,
one
act
closer.
One, yeah.
Yeah.
In the movie, it goes straight from Bruce to When I Grow Up. And the positioning doing that, I thought was so, like, thoughtful, because you have this moment where Bruce ends and it's basically like Miss Trunchbull taking him to the chokey, and then all of these kids singing about their, like, aspirations and their dreams. And I thought to focus on, like, specific children and see them, it was, like, so magical in such a different way. I don't know, like, how to describe it, but I thought that, like, the movie version of this song, like, added so much more emotion to an already, like, emotional song.
It's, like, one of those things that you can only do in movies. You know, in on stage, you're imagining what they're imagining. They're telling you what they're imagining, and then you're also, it's your imagination. And so that's very powerful on stage, because you can kind of insert anything. You can insert what your own things, your own dreams, your own hopes are. But then to see it on in the movie, where they kind of have to they show you exactly what these kids are imagining and exactly what they're thinking of, is also very powerful. Something that, like, I really loved about it is, like, the adults singing that song, because then you're also like, these kids want to be grown-ups, but then when you're a grown-up, you were once a child who also, like, had these
dreams
and wish to do these things. And, like, I don't know. I thought it was very emotional. Why am I crying? Anyway, no, I thought it was very, I thought it was very emotional because, you know, we are adults and we were once children who really, you know, thought in that same way. We wanted to grow up and we thought about all the things we would do when we were grown up. And sometimes you forget those things, or you still don't even feel like a grown up and you are still being like, one day I'll do this, one day I'll do that. So to include the grown-ups in that song, I thought was, like, really moving. And then you move into Miss Honey kind of closing it out, who is still, like, she is an adult but still feels very childlike because she is under the power of Miss Trunchbull, and she is still dreaming of, like, a future that is different from what she is now.
I also just realized, which we will get to this at the end of the episode, but our obsession of the week is kind of this too, you know? Like,
no, it's so true.
Whole,
I forgot.
Like,
it ties in.
Yeah,
it really ties in.
It's the exact same. So, wow, we did that. I would say my favorite song in the musical is Revolting Children, because it's literally such a showstopper. Think that this was the one that we knew before we watched the movie, because they had released, you know, clips of Red Beret.
They knew what they
dancing.
Were doing. They knew they what also, they were doing with that.
Yeah, they also released, like, the clip of the full, like, basically music video of the song before the movie even came out. And if you think that this song is good on stage, like, it is just as good in the movie. And what they were able to do, there were 200 children in this song dancing. I just read an article that was released on Playbill where Tim Minchin said that they made this, like, a few clicks faster for the movie instead of on stage, because there's a lot that you can play with when it comes to sound mixing that you obviously can't do in live theater. But it's just such a, first of all, the scene before they get into the song, I loved what they did with the set. Like, again, we said the budget on this movie, but, like, shout out to everybody who worked on this movie, whether it's CGI, actual, like, production set pieces, everything that was done for this movie. The scene is Miss Trunchbull builds like chokies for every single person that's in the class, and they're lined up through in this like warehouse basically, and then the kids just like break out into this massive song and dance, and it's done over multiple sets. It's outside. It's just like really, really great.
I think the person who really makes Revolting Children what it is, and she is so integral to the entire movie, but specifically Revolting Children, is Ellen Kane, the choreographer. She did work on the original like West End Broadway productions as the associate choreographer, but she kind of got to take control and be and do all the choreography for this movie. And I think the like visual language of this movie is so, so, so strong, and obviously seen in Revolting Children. It's just like her work is perfect. It's wonderful in this movie.
I mean, another one to shout out, which I think was maybe the biggest surprise to me in this movie, of one that I loved, and I think it's good on stage too, but the way that they shot it was so well done. School Song. I was obsessed with how they did School Song in this movie. If you've never seen the musical, there's almost like Scrabble letters that are along the stage. They kind of like are all the way around the stage. And they obviously can't do this for the movie because it takes place as it would in real life over like many days. There are different parts of the school. Like, you're very limited to space on the stage. But with School Song, and when they go through like the entire alphabet, which I think is just such a smart song in general, to have all of the like doors for the classrooms have letters on them, or them to like pop up exactly when someone said, I think it's Lavender who sings it. When she says a specific line, you see like a G or an H or an A or whatever. It was so, so well done. And I was like, when that song is pretty early in the movie, and that's when I thought, oh, they have like something really special here. They've really like put a lot of thought into this movie. And I think that goes along with what you were just saying about the choreographer. So many people that worked on the stage show worked on this movie, and that's so important when you want to be authentic to bringing your craft like to a different medium.
I think, you know, Matthew Warchus directed it on stage, and he also directed the movie, so he's been working on this show for 10 plus years. And that is shown that he knows it so, so well, and knows what's important, what hits with audiences, what is impactful, and what can kind of be lost, and just how to translate it correctly. Because sometimes when you have someone new coming in who, you know, only, has only seen it on stage, doesn't know it as intimately, like, they're not as familiar with, like, the beats that are important to the story and less important to the story. So, and, like, they weren't there in the development process. They don't know why certain things were cut or certain things were added. Whereas Matthew Warchus just, like, knows why every piece was in that stage show and knows why or why not it doesn't need to be in the movie.
Something else that was so impressive to me is that all of this was sung live. They did everything live. Yeah, filmed live. Lashana Lynch did an interview, I don't know who it was with, Variety, Deadline, someone, one of those big publications, and said that they sang it live to get like authenticity out of each scene, and it also, I think it helps you, like it helps get those emotions out there. And it was very like prevalent to me when she sings My House, which, like, oh my god, what a stunning voice she has, first of all.
So good.
Get her on stage, because you could really hear like the sobs in her voice, like holding back tears. And the only way to get that, to translate that on film, is to have her sing that live in the room. So I like absolutely love that aspect of it as well.
I know that I have everything I need.
discussed this before when talking about movie musicals, in that I do think the singing live on the day is important, because if you're singing to a track, sometimes you kind of have to sing to a track just because, yeah, like, logistic reasons, like Revolting
Children, I'm sure,
is probably a track.
Yeah, I was going to say, aspects of Revolting Children, I'm sure, were to track, yeah.
But if you're not singing live, if you're having recorded something, let's say, a few weeks earlier, and then on the day, you have to recreate the exact performance you gave, you have to commit to a performance, like, a month or weeks before you're actually giving the performance on the day. And relationship with the character might change, you might have new thoughts on it, but you're stuck, like, your performance is stuck in glass based on what you recorded that time. And there's no room to take chances or show a heightened emotion or to discover something new, because you have to recreate exactly what you did before. So I think singing live, like, allows people to take chances in their performance. And I think you, like, truly see, like you were saying, the emotion that Lashana Lynch's Miss Honey was giving in My House, which, again, another beautiful song. Like,
gorgeous. Stunning. That song is so, so beautiful. Another time when I thought that the singing live was, like, so impactful was when Alicia Weir, which we will talk about Alicia Weir when we get two performances, because star. But when she sings a song that I love from the musical, Quiet, I was like, okay, this is, like, she's really, that's exactly what you're talking about. Like, she could have recorded something, like, 3 weeks in advance where she had made choices on different parts of the song. But until you're on set doing those scenes with all of your cast members around you,
interacting, reacting to what people are doing around you.
And that song is so intense, and it's so intentional the way that she, and that's also the first time, which is very different from the Danny DeVito Matilda. That's the first time that we see her use her, like, telekinesis, whatever it is, powers, because she has such, like, built up emotion and then just, like, releases it. I thought that scene was stunning when she, like, floats up into the cloud and then has this, like, standoff moment with Ms. Trenchable. But if you don't have, like, Emma Thompson standing in front of you in this costume, like, you're not going to give that same performance,
scaring
no matter
you,
no,
like,
matter what it is. Yeah,
the intensity is not there.
Something else that I read in the Playbill article was that Tim Minchin said for this movie, they had a 55-piece orchestra, which is something that he could only dream of having
playing live, right?
They
were a track.
I don't know for sure how this stuff works. The only other time that I, like, in-depth read about singing live was for, like, Les Mis movie when they did it. Mm. And I know everyone wore, like, an earpiece or headphones so they could hear the music. But the music might have been playing live somewhere else. I don't really know exactly how it works.
I remember for La La Land, I don't know if it was the entire movie, but when Emma Stone did the audition song at the end, she had an earpiece.
Yeah.
And Justin Hurwitz was following her. Like, she wasn't following him. He was, like, taking her cues so she could, again, like, give the authentic performance in the moment.
Exactly.
And not,
like, that
be
makes,
like,
sense.
Oh, I have to be this speed. I have to be at this moment. She's like, no, I can take a breath. I can, like, wait for this if that feels authentic in the moment.
And I think that's obviously the beauty of live theater, is that you get to make every performance every single day different. And
so
maybe
true.
Because they had so much of the original creative team work on this movie, they wanted to bring that aspect into film, and very successful, in my opinion.
And they valued that. Like, sometimes film people don't necessarily value that, like, in the momentness of theater, but because they're theater people, they know how important that is.
Yeah, so a lot of, like, really great choices made behind the scenes, I feel, on this, which is great.
Speaking of Alicia Weir, Naughty, to me, is such a wonderful song. Like, truly so well-written as a musical theater number, as would you call this, like, an I Want song? I don't know.
Kind of, because she's, like, trying to get out of a bad situation, almost, and, like, wants a better future. I'm surprised we never talked about this on I Want Songs, because that's maybe in between.
It maybe doesn't quite fit the definition. It's kind of the first time you see her, like, taking control of her own life. Like, she's in this situation with her parents, and she's just kind of like, she's a child, so you can't really expect her to do anything, but she's mm-hmm. kind of just like accepting it and living with it. But in Naughty, she like fights back for the first time. She's like, this is the new normal, this is how I'm gonna be from now on. So, and it's just like wonderful when the like the bridge, if you will, when she just like picks up. So good. Love that song. If you always take it on the chin and wear it, you might as well be saying you think that it's okay, and that's not right. And if it's not right, you have to put it right. But nobody else is gonna put it right for me. Nobody but me is gonna change my story. Sometimes you have to be a little bit naughty.
And then we were just discussing before we started recording, like, the nod to the musical of the hands on the hip. Like, mm-hmm. I'm so happy that that was there. Yeah, I don't know. Sure. I think we talked a lot about in 2021, the year of the movie musical, if these movies, once you see them, would entice you to see the stage show. Obviously, mm-hmm. Dear Evan Hansen was a complete turn off to the stage show. Whereas I think Matilda would be a huge turn on to the stage show. And I think if it were to go on tour again, a lot more people would probably go see it.
Yeah, I think especially because if you're exposing it to a new generation of kids and parents even, if like, let's say I was a parent and I watched this with my kids and then I saw the tour was coming through town, I'd be like, yeah, let's go. We have to go.
Yeah.
Because it was so fun. So absolutely.
I also think like if you're a kid that, or you're watching it with your kids that are interested in musical theater, like what an amazing thing to watch, because it's like, oh, this is what could be possible. Like, it's so exciting to see this many stupid talented children like on one screen. It's actually like outrageous how talented these kids are.
They're
like,
really great.
It's very amazing. So let's talk about performances. Alicia Weir, an unknown, I would say. Like,
well, she's a child. Like, what else has she done before this?
I don't know. Like, Red Beret Girl was in Cats, so still an unknown, but also in Cats. But I don't think she's done anything big. She is from the UK, but as soon as she came on screen, I feel like she held that entire movie on her shoulders and gave such an authentic and real performance. I don't know. I really thought she was like doing an incredible job. And maybe the reason that I love this movie so much is because of her and her performance.
No, she was truly wonderful. She like captured the spirit of Matilda so well. And vocally, she was beautiful, stunning.
Vocally, so good. Yeah. I want to say she was like 11 when they filmed this, because we think they filmed it in 2020.
We should be able to find this out. We should be able to find out when they filmed this. She was born in the year 2009, if you want to be depressed about that.
Yeah.
So she's 13 now.
Crazy.
But she is, yeah, I don't know when they filmed this. Didn't start filming until May 2021.
I'm not late.
I mean, it's 2022 that just passed, so they had like a year.
A year, yeah. But still,
yeah, started filming in May 2021. It was supposed to go into production in 2020, but then obviously did not, as many things did not. And then it went into actual production started filming in May 2021. So it would be ready for when theaters reopened. So, yeah.
Oh, like movie theaters or actual, like stage theaters?
Movie theaters. Both, yeah. But movie theaters specifically.
Right.
Even though it's a Netflix original.
I know.
But whatever.
Someone we haven't named here, like, at all, Emma Thompson as Miss Trunchbull. I feel like you have many thoughts on
this. I do have many thoughts on this. And some of them are from watching the movie, and some of them are from just, like, hearing and reading. Mm-hmm. And I think also maybe just, like, the number one, this might just be an issue with, like, the source material in general. Like, this is an adaptation of the source material. But I think the character of Miss Trunchbull is interesting because Roald Dahl seems to, and this is like maybe in like many of his works, seems to conflate like unattractiveness or like fatness with evil or bad. And it's a little like upsetting. Yeah. Like, and then, you know, she's wearing a fat suit. obviously. And then also she's has like she had a lot of prosthetics on and like a nose prosthetic. Well, sometimes
I think it was a nose and a chin
jaw.
Prosthetic.
The jaw prosthetic, yeah. I think, like right here. I was like, what is on her face? Like the jaw situation. And I think like let's talk about like on Broadway and on the West End, traditionally played by a man altogether.
I think everywhere. I think like literally the casting call for Miss Trunchbull on stage is that a man plays a woman.
Right. Yeah. And
I don't know if that's changed since
I don't know what's happening in the West End.
So much has come out
right now.
In the last like few years, but I don't know if that's changed or not. Yeah.
I don't know what's happening on the West End right now, but I think, and maybe 10 years ago, we didn't think about it this way, but
before you even go on, like originally supposed to be played by Ralph Fiennes, who is a man playing a woman. Yeah.
Exactly. Yes. And then they changed that casting. And again, this, like, it's adapted from a novel. Like, I think these are images that come directly from that original book because there's illustrations. But I think, like, it's problematic or upsetting that this, like, evil person is a woman, but they're so unattractive because they're so manly.
Yeah.
It's a little bit, like, weird.
There's that whole, like, side, which exists in the original movie, too, that she plays shot put. So she's, like, a very masculine woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if they put the shot put storyline in to, like, give her more power. I'm not really sure, like, why. Or to just, like, literally put you off to be, like, there's, like, not an ounce of femininity, like, in her at all. Maybe that's the reason that they do that.
Yes, and it's like, I don't even, again, I don't know if there's like fully formed thoughts on this from me, but that this is your villain of the story. Obviously, Matilda's parents are also villains to a lesser extent, but...
But not so much in this iteration, I would say.
They're neglectful. Like, her parents they're are very neglectful.
Really, yeah.
They're neglectful. Like, I mean, even that, like, and I'm not from the UK, so I'm not familiar with accents, but their accents are like a bit more lower class. And again, they're like... bad parents, neglectful parents. So, like, pretty people are nice. Mm-hmm. And then, like, unattractive or, let's say, poorer or, like, low-class people are, like, the evil people. And it's just kind of, like, a weird distinction to draw in these movies. And this is not a problem with, like, this adaptation of this musical. Like, it's an adaptation of something else. Yeah. But it is just a little bit icky, I think. That your villains or your, like, bad parents, your neglectful parents are portrayed in this way. And then your heroes are portrayed, oh, they're beautiful, they're nice, they're pretty, they're soft-spoken. Like, and it's seen from, like, a child's eyes. So there's, like, the whole idea that nothing in this is as dramatic in real life. But because it's seen through a children's eyes, everything is so much more exaggerated. Like... if Matilda goes to school, is Miss Trunchbull grabbing a girl by the pigtails and throwing her out? I don't know. But from a kid's perspective, it's like so much more exaggerated. I don't know.
I think in that Danny DeVito movie, everything that happened in that movie, I want to say would have happened in real life.
Everything that's happened is real. I don't know. But yeah, like, and then to take Emma Thompson in this movie, and I'm like, oh, they're casting Emma Thompson. That's a different direction. But then to still make her look like a man. And to put her in a fat suit and to give her this exaggerated jawline.
You didn't think that they were going to do that?
I don't know what I thought, but seeing it, I was thinking, this is a little weird. You know, they didn't cast a man. They cast a woman to play a woman. And then they gave her this jaw prosthetic to make her look more masculine.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I don't like that. Like, why not just have her be evil looking like herself? Why does she have to wear... the padding? Why does she have to have like this more masculine features added to her face?
Why I think it's just be literally evil? to associate it with the character that we all know from the book, and also book. Like to me, and I know that the woman that played Mr. I don't even know who the woman that played Miss Trunchbull is in the Danny DeVito version, but like there, as far as I know, there were no prosthetics involved. Like that's just how this woman
her
looks
face.
In real life.
And that's okay.
Yeah, of course.
Actually, my new campaign is cast ugly people to play ugly people and cast fat people to play fat people.
Well,
like, no, I'm
yes.
serious.
No,
I'm
100%. Serious. We've been saying like, this for... like, cast authentically is what should be happening here.
Like, why are we taking a child playing Bruce and putting him in this padding? I don't understand it.
I don't either, but I think that that's more than just an argument for this movie, because I would say absolutely. That every kid in that musical is just cast because they can sing and not because of how they look. Like, I don't think, absolutely. I actually don't think anybody is cast in the movie or the musical based on how they actually look. I think they've, like, created this, we have like very basic, again, I don't know specifically because I really don't remember the Roald Dahl book, but I think they have very specific characteristics, and I literally think they followed exactly how he wrote it. Like, if Miss Trunchbull was written that she looks this way, we got to make her look this way. And that's like, that's all there was to it. Is it right? No. But I think they're trying to be authentic to the story that was written.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. But yeah, like, putting a child in that padding to me was also upsetting. I was like, this is weird.
You're definitely like not alone in that. There's a lot of critiques on that on the internet.
Why are we doing this?
I don't know why they did this. As we know, there were 200 kids. He was
wonderful.
That were,
he was a wonderful performer, but
great. There were 200 kids that were cast in this movie. Surely someone out of those 200 kids fit the mold of Bruce better than this child that was maybe 3 feet tall at best.
Oh my God, so tiny. Which it made it more jarring, honestly, because his legs were so skinny. His legs are
well,
so
I do want to. I do want to point out though, because a lot of people online were like, "He didn't wear the fat suit until after he ate the cake." No, that the was kid was wearing the fat too. Suit the entire movie. Time. Yeah, so it's not like it doesn't work weird. Like that. Either you way. Can't. You can't like get. I mean, maybe you
no,
can.
No, but
this,
I thought
like,
it would be like a comedy
world.
Moment to be like, "Oh, after he eats the cake, he's now like twice the size."
But it is
that
interesting
been
what
funny
you're saying because, like, the only other I would say Roald Dahl that I know just as well as this is. Like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And it's kind of the same thing. Like Augustus Gloop.
Fatness equals laziness equals
but also like
unpleasantness.
Kind of a villain. Like he was like a bad kid. He was a terrible kid. And then like the only good kid was Charlie, which is kind of like breaks the mold of what you were saying. Like they were a poor family. So he got something good in the end, which I guess is like good. But all of the other kids were like rich means you're a terrible person, which maybe sometimes it does mean that you're a terrible person if you're rich.
It's a separate issue. Like, it's a separate issue.
Yeah. But like Mike TV's family, I think of them and how like they were bad parents because all they did was like let their child like watch TV. So it is, maybe this is a Roald Dahl.
Sure. Issue. And I mean, there are many criticisms of Roald Dahl that we cannot even get into. Let's not talk about anti-Semitism on this podcast at the moment. I mean, let's not talk about it, but like the nose on Ms. Trunchbull, like,
is that intentional?
Let's just let that.
No, it's true. And if you think about like witches or the witches, all of them, like that is specifically about the look of someone's nose. There's a whole plot line about the look of someone's nose. So like, it's very interesting stuff.
So this is an accurate adaptation of the source material, but critical thought put into the adaptation?
No, but I also wonder if this is a situation that, like... Actually, no, I can't even say that. I was going to say that, like, they didn't consult, so there's nothing that they could do about it. But I actually don't think the entire, like, escapologist storyline is even in the book.
Yeah, I think it's new. Like, they're able to add and change. Like, they can't...
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, why couldn't Emma Thompson just... be herself. She's a wonderful actress. Like she could portray that menace that Miss Trunchbull has without a giant nose and the jaw and the like. I know they wanted to like make her look bigger, like more menacing, but like I don't know, like the shoulders even, like again to make her look more masculine. It's a little bit weird.
Maybe because they thought that it would just look like Emma Thompson and they didn't want that.
Yes, maybe.
Also, she's someone that, like, always seems to wear prosthetics and things. Not to, like, defend these decisions, but she is never, like, truly herself in a lot of stuff. Like, she's always
characters. She did do Nanny McPhee, which she wrote. She created for herself. With prosthetics. Again, like, she purposely wrote this, like, intentionally unattractive character.
Totally.
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, there's a... It's
a discussion. It's a discussion.
The makeup department? Serving.
Slade. Costumes. Amazing.
Yeah, like, All this to say, really, those done prosthetics, well. Done really well. Good stuff. Really good stuff. Even thinking about her in like Harry Potter, like what she looks like in Harry Potter, right? Like,
yes,
there's that's a lot all, going like, on there.
Costumes and wig and stuff.
Yeah, but I think it was like maybe to try and like conceal the Emma Thompson identity a bit. I also want to say that like all this aside, recasting Ralph Fiennes, the correct choice.
Sure. Yes, absolutely. We have come...
Also, given what we know now.
We have come like a long way, and I do think like the comedy of... I don't even know if it's meant to be funny, but it is kind of meant to be funny. The comedy of, yes, this is a man as a woman, and also... I don't know. Yeah, it's just weird now to think about it. I don't know. Yeah. In a way that we would have never considered, we should have been considering it, but it would have, in a way that we would have never considered it 5 years ago, 10 years ago, when we were first seeing this musical.
So did that, like, completely taint the entire Trunchbull performance for you?
For me, like, everything I've ever seen Emma Thompson in, I've always enjoyed her in, but I did find it, like, quite distracting, being like, wait, what prosthetics is she exactly wearing? Yeah. Like, what's making her look different right now? Like, right. Oh, I think it's the jaw. We were, like, discussing the prosthetics the entire time. We're like, oh, they've given her, like, shoulder pads. They've, like, padded her in this way. Yeah, it was very distracting to me, personally. Yeah.
For me, I love the performance in the Danny DeVito Matilda Trunchbull that no matter what, even when I saw it on stage, there's no performance that can compare to that because that was like so real and authentic then. And it's so like ingrained in my mind that I actually don't love the like musicalization of Miss Trunchbull. I also don't think her songs are very good in comparison to like the rest of the songs in this show. So it's just like hard for me to like that character in general. Also because the character is like a terrible person. It's just like there's nothing going for that character for me.
They're the antagonists. Like they are like Matilda and these children's like nightmare. So
yeah.
You know, you're not meant to like them. Yeah, it was played by Pam Ferris in the original 1996 movie. And she's done many things. But the thing we would know her from, interestingly, is actually Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban.
I knew this.
She played Aunt Marge. And I'm like, that's interesting. Not to like get too into it, but in that book, I mean, we can't even talk about J.K. Rowling's.
No, there's a lot of things in this specific episode.
But she's described as having these, like, in the book, she's described as having these, like, mannish hands. And she's described very masculinely as well. Like, the way she, like, her dogs and stuff. And so at the time, reading it when I was a child, you know, you're just like, oh, haha, she's evil. But the way that characters are portrayed, like, it's not just a Roald Dahl problem. Like, oh, this is a bad character. And then the way you physically describe them, a lot of times for women, takes on these, like, masculine characteristics. And as a child, like, you don't have the kind of, like, critical thinking to see how, like, harmful that is to, well, to everyone, but specifically to, like, trans people to describe these, like, women in that way. I don't know. This is not a fully formed thought, but it's just,
no,
it's icky.
I know what
it's
you're icky. Saying. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. And I don't know that Matilda the movie musical is the movie to solve this problem.
No,
but...
no, we're not solving a problem, but we're critically examining media that is for us and that children are watching and forming their, like, the way that they consume media through what they consume at a young age.
On the flip side, let's talk about a performance that was, I think, like, maybe surprising to me, but I don't know why it was surprising because I actually don't think I've seen Lashana Lynch in really anything else. But her Miss Honey, again, the other, I can't even remember who the actress is, but I know that she was someone's mother on Love, Victor. Do you remember this?
Oh my goodness.
I think she was like, I think she was like Benji's mom in one of the seasons and then she was recast.
Was she Benji's mom? Okay.
I think so. The original Miss Honey.
See. No, no.
I swear.
Margaret Campbell?
That means
is that Benji's last name? I'm looking it up. Benji.
But was she in Love, Victor? Because that's all the...
She was in Love, Victor. She was in Love, Victor.
I feel like that's all I need.
Yeah. Yeah, she's Benji's mom. Wow, you nailed it. You absolutely nailed it.
That's a very obviously different performance, the Miss Honey in the Danny DeVito Matilda versus Miss Honey in the stage production. I also want to say, and I could be very wrong because it's been a long time since we've really paid attention to Matilda, but often played by a white actress. This is a
absolutely
great diversity casting. Although kind of like leans into what you're saying, because she was treated horribly as a child. Miss Trunchbull is her aunt. There's a lot of
could you say she's been enslaved?
Yes.
Could you say that?
So maybe it actually is important that a woman of color plays this character to like rewrite her narrative at the end of the story, which is what ends up happening. As I mentioned earlier in this episode, Lashana Lynch's My House is gorgeous, like truly stunning. And apparently she has like a bit of a history of musical theater. So as I said, would love to see her on stage. But she's like kind of busy doing a lot of movies right now.
She's very busy. So I've actually seen Lashana Lynch in a TV series before. It was called Star-Crossed? Still Star-Crossed?
Oh, I don't know.
And it was a Romeo and Juliet sequel television show produced by Shonda Rhimes. It was on ABC. It ran for 7 episodes and then was canceled. And basically, Romeo and Juliet died, and then they betrothed Rosalind and Benvolio to each other. And it was the story of them falling in love.
This, I would like to say that this rings a bell, but it actually does not.
I watched all episodes, and then I read the YA novel that it was based on. She was lovely in it. She played Rosalind, obviously. She was very good, but it was the first time I ever saw her in anything. And then that got canceled. Good news for her, because now she's in James Bond. She's in Captain Marvel. Like, she's booked and busy. I think the Shonda Rhimes-produced ABC television show, Still Star-Crossed, being canceled was really probably the best thing to ever happen to her. Really was the best thing to ever happen to her. So,
yeah.
Happy for you, Lashana.
Also, her being in this and people getting to see a different side of her, I think is really great. Yeah.
Yeah.
And playing such a, like, well-known, like, lovely character. I love Miss Honey.
People will not be watching this for her, but will see her in this and then, like, seek out her other work, which is exciting for her.
So the other song that she sings is actually a new song.
Right.
I'm trying to find what it's called.
Still Holding My Hand.
A duet with Matilda and Miss Honey, because something that I left out of the synopsis is that Miss Honey ends up adopting Matilda at the end of this story, which I always thought was such a funny way to end this, because they just like have papers to sign her over as if it's so easy to get these papers.
It's a multi-year process for
adoption. But I guess that's part of the like fantasticalness of this like Roald Dahl created world. But I like this song. I know you don't care for this song, but I did like the scene that was with it where like they kind of made a carnival for no reason at the school. And then it just ends with like Matilda and Miss Honey, like lying beside each other on the top of the like library truck, which I thought was, I love that truck. I thought that was such a good idea to have like an RV that goes around. That's a little library.
Yes.
And that they both just like bond over their terrible, like lived shared experiences. They both were traumatized by Miss Trunchbull. And the abuse
and their parents. Well, not intentionally for Miss Honey. Yes, the thing about this song is I really feel it did not fit in with any of the other music in this musical. Like, it just felt very out of place. And maybe it's because I have familiarity with every other song in this musical, and this one was like new, so it was like jarring to the ear. But it didn't feel like it was necessary, and it didn't feel cohesive with the other music in the movie.
Yeah, I understand that. I like the song, but I do wish that they ended it like they do on stage with When I Grow Up Reprise, because love that.
That's one thing I miss about movie musicals is like, where are the bows?
Where are the bows? We needed bows. We needed bows for the kids.
Hortensia in the red beret to bow.
It's true. We needed her specifically. Also, did you notice that like she had a cast on her arm?
I did.
So she was doing all that with a cast. And was it because her arm was truly broken? Oh, okay.
No, I think it was a character choice. I think it was a character choice. Because in the rehearsal, she's not wearing a cast. But maybe she
but
broke
like,
it.
Maybe she broke her arm.
I think it's a character choice for her to... Maybe because, like, she suffered abuse at the school. I don't know.
Oh, true. Yeah, because all the kids... this is also something that could, like, never happen in real life. Like, if a teacher was abusing children, it would not go on for as long as this goes on.
It's crazy.
Amanda Thripp being swung by her pigtails.
By the pigtails? Crazy. I saw a clip of them... The chokey is crazy. I saw a clip of them rehearsing it for the stage version, how they, like, actually, like...
Yeah, me too.
Safely grab the child. I'm like, that's crazy that they just, like, do that.
Something else that, like, I thought was interesting and that I never thought about in this stage show, but a lot of people have been talking about it with this movie, is that it's a very good examination of anxiety in children. And I was like, I kind of understand this because it gets to a point where, like, Matilda, I would say, I guess it's in Quiet is when it happens, when her, like, telekinesis comes into play, like, has a breakdown or maybe a panic attack or, like, a breakthrough almost. And because she has no one to talk to about it, she portrays her anxieties through her storytelling, which just so happens to be the actual true story of Miss Honey, the Eskimopologist and the acrobat. And I thought that Alicia Weir, whether she tried to intentionally or not, did such a good job of showing, like, the ebbs and flows of anxiety and how, like, certain things could make you more anxious than others and how it was just, like, presented. And I thought, like, this is maybe such a good thing to show on screen for kids to, like, maybe have a conversation about at some point, like, when they're old enough to talk about it with their, like, family and properly talk about it. So I did like that aspect of the movie, and I don't know that we got so much of this in the stage show because there's just, like, so much happening on stage that you're trying to process everything at once, you know?
Yeah, it's a lot going on.
Yeah.
On stage. And you can't see, like, facial expressions as well.
No, that's true. Something that was very helpful with this movie was the facial expressions. But I think I don't know that we can say that for every movie musical, because, like, again, Dear Evan Hansen was just, like, so
we could see
bad.
The wrinkles. We could see the aging when the zooms in the close-ups for Ben Platt. And see his sunspots.
Okay, before we rank this movie, final thoughts.
I think as an adaptation from an adaptation of an adaptation, like, the stage show is translated really beautifully to screen. I think they took what was wonderful about the musical and, like, amplified it and made it wonderful in the movie.
Yeah.
I think there are things, like, maybe inherently that I, like, struggle with the story in general that maybe are, like, the overall problem. But yeah, so, like, good, would recommend, but, like, with a critical eye.
No, I think that's fair to say. I obviously like this movie a lot more than you did, but I agree.
I did like it with
all of the critiques, because I think the critiques have always been there. We've just never, like, sat down to actually discuss, like, what's wrong with certain aspects of this story. And again, I don't think this movie was about to make, like, drastic changes to their stage show. Otherwise, they would have to, like, honestly redo most of the stage show. But I would be interested if anyone has, like, recently seen Matilda on stage. Who is playing Trunchbull right now? Is it a man? Is it a woman? We can obviously Google this for ourselves, but, like, I would like
to
know if anyone
has
seen it, because I do think it would be interesting. I think I would also recommend this movie. I think it's one to watch with your kids, obviously, if you have kids. And agree, I think it's a very true to stage to movie adaptation. Maybe one of the truest that we've seen in a long time. And I would campaign for all stage creatives to work on their movie musical adaptations if possible, because it really does make a difference. It's great
for
to
sure.
see those stage pictures come to life in a different way. Okay, what are you ranking this movie?
Okay, I've struggled with this.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to give it... seven red berets out of 10.
Honestly, I thought you would maybe gone lower, but okay.
I really had to think about it, but red berets out of 10 red berets.
I am giving this 9 out of 10 chokies.
Chokies, okay.
Even after we just said that everything that we just said about Miss Trenchfield, chokie is very iconic.
It is iconic.
Yeah. But yeah, I am interested to see now the life of the stage show post this movie. Will it come back to Broadway anytime soon? Absolutely not. But I do think it could do a U.S. tour. Also, like, do this at your schools. Like, if you...
Is this available to license?
I want to say it... I mean, you guys did not do a license production.
We did an unauthorized summer camp that me and Tara worked out.
Who wrote that script? This summer.
We did an unauthorized production of Matilda, which was actually my favorite show we ever did.
It was fun. I went to see it.
Tara saw it. Tara came. It was really fun. The kids had a really good time, even though they weren't really familiar with the musical before we did it. But mm-hmm. we did school song. We had, like, letter construction paper.
Did any of them...
the kids got to, like...
Had any of them seen the movie? The, like, Danny DeVito movie? Do you know?
I'm not sure, because this was, like, 2014.
They wouldn't have been born, obviously.
They would not have been born. So it depends really on what their parents showed them at that point.
Yeah.
So
I wonder if they had read the book, even.
Maybe some of them had read the book. I don't know. Yeah. But it wasn't, like, a super well-known thing for them. It was kind of, like, a mid-generation of kids who, like, didn't have mm-hmm. that much familiarity with Matilda. And they definitely mm-hmm. didn't know the music at all. So we had a really good time. And one of my favorite finales we ever did, because it was to the finale, like, When I Grow Up.
Yeah.
We did the choreography.
That's fun.
The kids, like, got to, like, wail Revolting Children, and they got to, like, they like when they get to, like, go crazy, I always found. So, yeah. Revolting Children, they really got to, like, go nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a really fun one. I did one of my favorite ones I ever did. I think I have videos of every single musical number somewhere on my computer. Which we will not be showing because I do not have consent of the children.
No,
but
exactly.
I do have videos of every single musical number from that show. Anyway.
But yeah, that's a good question. I actually don't know if it's licensed, but if it's not licensed, it should be because every school should do. I mean, not maybe every school, but like still, they should do it.
Because there's still a production running in the UK.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not.
But yeah, it's a good, like, if you have a lot of kids, it's a good ensemble show to do. Yes. It's very fun. Mm-hmm. So yeah. So that is our thoughts on Matilda, the movie musical, and it's now time for our obsession of the week. Okay, so we actually have a joint obsession of the week, and a precursor announcement here. You can't see this. So sorry. No. It closed in January. No. We don't love doing this kind of stuff, but there was no way around this. And
we have to talk about it.
We have to talk about it because it was that good. Now, that being said, we haven't even exposed what it is. It did have a life in 2021, had a life in 2022, so maybe it will
filmed.
Have a life.
It has been filmed as well. Can we still watch the filmed version?
I don't think so, because I think I tried to find it. I think it was very, like, exclusive to streaming at the time. You had to buy a ticket.
Right.
It was a ticket
and you would purchase tickets, for sure. Yeah. For sure. But
because
it has been filmed,
it exists.
It's
saved. Yeah.
Yeah, it exists.
And we were talking about Bat Hats Theater's production of Alice in Wonderland. As we were recording this episode, we saw this yesterday. It was so good. Like, I don't
wonderful.
Know that I why I thought that it wouldn't be good. Maybe because we've never seen a Bad Hats production before. We've never seen a show at Soulpepper before. So
I was worried it was,
like,
going to be juvenile. I was worried it was going to be
Because they had so many, I actually agree with you. I think this is why I thought that it wasn't going to be, like, as good as it was. Because they had so many daytime performances. It was actually, like, quite hard for us to see this because...
we have jobs. We're employed girls, okay?
Yes. And
daytime
also
shows do not work.
Daytime shows don't work for us. And also they had, like, a lot of shows that ran over the holidays. And, like, it's just very hard to, like, match up schedules. But specifically the final week of production for them, it ended up extending to January 7th. We saw it on January 6th. But the, like, shows during the week were 4 p.m.s and we could not attend. So there was a couple 7 p.m.s. We had, like, a couple choices. But again... as it started getting down to the wire, like, a lot of sold out performances, and rightfully so, sold out performances, because
fantastic.
My God, this was so much better than I thought it was going to be. I loved it.
Yeah.
I, like, truly loved it.
No. You said earlier, but I agree, like, absolutely no notes. It was
no notes.
So great.
Zero
I don't have
notes.
A criticism in any way. It was just so perfectly. Like, the tone was perfect. It was funny for kids, but funny for adults. Some true laugh out loud moments, like, where the audience just, like, burst into laughing.
I was crying. I was laughing so hard. Like, there was a good... There was a good chunk of time when I, like, could not contain myself. I was laughing so hard.
And they just kept acting. And I was like, I gotta pay attention. Yeah, there were... I was laughing because I was crying. I was crying because I was laughing. I was crying because I was emotional.
Yeah, catch us bawling at the end of this show. Yeah. Like, it truly... Zero notes. Perfection. Like, honestly. Couldn't have asked for anything better than this.
Friend and past guest of the podcast, Vanessa Sears, is in it playing the Red Queen. So funny. And, like... the various characters she gets to play. Another fave, Tess Banger as Alice, who
I said to you yesterday, and I want to say it publicly, the only thing that we saw her in before was Sunny in the Park with George, which we did talk about her after we saw it, saying what an incredible performance. I want to see Tess in everything she does going forward, because she is that good. So yeah, good.
Anything she does, I will watch. I will seek it. We missed her in Sweeney Todd this year, which is okay. I know. We heard it wasn't that good anyway, but that's okay. Yeah. yeah, music, so fun. Timing, 90 minutes.
85, perfect. Actually. Even better.
Perfect. So yeah. Good. Written by, so adapted by Fiona Saunders, who was in the show. Music by Landon Doak and Victor Pachinko, who, were they in the show too? Landon Doak was Victor in the show?
I don't know. Also want to say...
No, he wasn't, but he was behind the booth selling Bad Hats merch.
Oh, very inclusive cast here, which is...
For sure.
Amazing to see. And, like, what a good way... This was our first show of the new year, so what a good way to kick off theater. And proud of us, because not a big corporation show. This is a small... theater company, and we, like, really want to see a lot more of productions like this in Toronto. We have, like, some on the lineup already for this year, so, like, really, really excited. And to think that, like, we were so close to missing this, I would have been so mad to miss this.
We wouldn't have known. We wouldn't have known.
Although Robert Marcus did tell us about this when we spoke to him, that this was a really good filmed production, so really happy that we got to see it. So there's, like... Is there, like, a moment we could pick out for Obsession of the Week here? I think it's, like, truly the entire show. But yes. I will put in our, like, description on YouTube the trailer for this show. And I will insert a bit of the song that Vanessa sings as the Red Queen. They say it's hard to wear a crown. They want to keep us on the ground. Just wait to play the right card and you'll travel far. It isn't that hard. They're gonna try to lie to you. But yeah, the songs were so good. Also, we didn't mention everyone, like, plays instruments, like, on stage.
Yes, yes,
which I love.
The piano being played, the bass guitar, the box.
Also, shout out to
they were playing. There was an early song that was, like, so good, and I can't remember. It's so. This is the thing I was thinking about earlier, when shows don't have a cast recording, like. Yeah. It's they hard. Like come in and out, and like you, I loved it so much, but it's like it's already disappearing from my mind.
But I think why this is so relatable to this episode is because the entire like plot line of this specific iteration of Alice in Wonderland is that they're at school and they're filling out a questionnaire, and the 12th question is, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I think like that obviously means so many different things to every person. Absolutely. And that's why you can tell, like, you know when a show is so good when the kids are having a great time, but, like, catch all the adults being so, like, in their feels in that cackling. Final number. No, in the final number when she's singing about, like, crying. Her, like, being her. Like, that's what she wants to be when she grows up. And but I could see because it was in the... Matilda. It's very similar to Matilda. Oh, yeah, we're, like... We were in the, like round-ish, but almost, not really in the round, but we could see directly the other side, and you could just see, like, people, like, wiping their face, like, drying their tears, and I heard someone say when we were leaving that, like, they were crying from, like, the unicorn moment onwards. It was just, like, it was so good. What a great script.
Well, because it was absolutely targeted for children, but the, like, those sentiments that you feel as a child, like, are still the same sentiments that you feel when you grow up and get older. Like, you...
Yeah.
You, it's never... You never, like, are like, oh, And I've answered that question. Like, you really don't know. And so, like, it's very relatable to a child, obviously, but to an adult, like, it's never solved. It's never answered.
And then also very sweet around the theater, when you walk in, they had, like, kids that had filled out the questionnaires around the whole theater. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just, like, everything about it was so good. I also want to shout out Matt Pillipiak. He was the teacher and is also the managing and artistic producer at Bad Hats. What a performance. So funny the whole way through. Every character was so funny.
Yes. To me, when I was, like, truly cackling was when they were at the tea party. And they were, like, interesting. Have you heard about the weather? Like, they're, like, cackling the whole way through. But that moment was, like, really funny to me.
Should we discuss some etiquette while we're here?
Oh, girl. Can I discuss some theater etiquette? Wow, 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 wow.
We haven't talked about etiquette truly on this podcast in a very long time. And I think it's time we bring it back around before we wrap up this episode.
Girl, I had the privilege of sitting next to an audience member at Alice in Wonderland at Bad Hats.
Also, keep in mind, very small theater. So not only did Steph have the privilege of sitting next to him, but everyone around him had the privilege of sitting next to him.
Yeah. And this man could not shut up. And I gotta be honest, we're not silent in a theater. We will whisper to each other. We will give each other looks. Like, we will...
Okay, but keyword, like, oh, whisper.
Whisper. We'll choose our moments. Choose our moments. This man, I don't know if he thought everyone around him was a dumb, but he would be like, a key would appear. And he would be like, key. Gloves would start coming down from the ceiling. Gloves. There was a moment when they're in a forest, but the point is that they've forgotten their memory. So they're on the stage, they're like, I don't know what these are. And he's like, trees. And we're like, yes. And then, so in Alice in Wonderland, they went from, like, square to square to square. And he'd be like, now they have to go to the seventh square. It's like, yes, that comes after six. And just, like, and not even silently. They said it
in the show.
They said that exact thing in the show. And not even silently, like, full voice.
Out loud, just yeah.
Full voice. And I'm like, who are you talking to? Are you talking to yourself? Are you talking to your neighbor? Are you talking to me? And every time he would do it, I would just look at her ear and just be like...
You know, it was...
A man in front of us was just, like, kept looking back.
I know. It was so loud. There was also many things... I mean, everyone has a different sense of humor, but he was laughing at truly everything. And some of it weren't jokes.
They were, like, kind of serious moments.
I just think it was funny because, one, do not act like that at a theater. Never say things out loud like that. Like, he's not a child. I expect, like, this is what I thought maybe the audience would be like if we were sitting in a room full of children. But, like,
yes,
a fully grown man, like, speaking out loud.
Just making but we were the most kind of, like, banal observations about what's happening on stage.
I feel like there was a foreshadow to this because as he sat down, he was telling the person that he came with that him and his sister had been to, and the only reason I know the story is because he was speaking full volume. Went to,
so it was before the show started, so it's okay.
Yeah, which is fine. But that he went to see Into the Woods with his sister, and the people in front of him had to turn around to tell him to stop singing during the show. So also... Don't sing out loud. And I know there are a lot of times when you feel compelled to sing, but, like, just don't do it. Like, just do not do it. So just a little etiquette chat
Silence.
On this episode.
Yeah. And, you know, you don't need to state everything that's happening on stage. It's there for everyone to discover on their own time.
Yeah.
You know, they've staged it in a way to draw your eye to certain things or to draw your eye away. You don't need to point out everything that's happening, okay?
Yeah.
It's just let it breathe. Let it live.
Yeah.
It was quite a lot. It was quite a lot. I couldn't handle
it. It was a lot.
There was a time when I was like, after the show was over, should I turn to this man and be like, you are a horrible audience member? But then I remembered I hate confrontation, and I was like, we're leaving. I was almost compelled to speak. And when I'm compelled to speak...
It's got to be bad. And I feel like if the show wasn't as good as it was, it maybe would have, like, ruined your entire experience of where we were. You know what I mean?
So,
like, that stuff
can,
like, ruin experiences for people.
I was laughing. It was so funny.
Keep your thoughts to yourself. And then you can, like, maybe make a comment at the end of the show of how good it is if you feel the need to.
If you want to talk to your seatmate, when people are, like, applauding at the end of a number,
that's
a good time to whisper when, like, It's not a
song. Always a whisper, never full volume. Yeah. Never
no,
full volume.
No, your full voice should not be heard during
no.
a show.
No, and you know what is also a great time? And unfortunately, there was no intermission. But intermission is a great time to speak your thoughts.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah. Or in the car ride home. Not
yeah.
Not the whole
as you're leaving
the show. Yeah.
As you're leaving.
Anyway, if this man ever listens to this podcast, be better at the next show that you go to. And with like that
full volume. Tree.
Yeah.
Yeah, we know.
So yeah, Obsession of the Week is Bad Hat Theater's production of Alice in Wonderland.
And our anti-obsession is that man I sat next to because
yeah. So a PSA for everyone, be a better audience member, make the correct choices. That's our Obsession of the Week, and that's our thoughts on Matilda the Movie Musical. If you want to listen to any of our other episodes, you can subscribe to our podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. We'd really appreciate it if you left us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And you can watch us here on YouTube, and don't forget to subscribe.
And you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @OffToBeAwayPodcast with the number 2.
And we'll see you guys next time.
Bye.